From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Full moon tonight, and a special Paranormal Investigators Night with you, beginning in just a half hour. But first, here's what's happening. An amazing story at the UN, the U.S. delegation walking out of the UN speech of Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad after he had some things to say about speculation about who was behind the 9/11 terror attacks. The U.S. delegation left the hall after Ahmadinejad said that there were three theories about the 9/11 attacks. One, he said, that powerful and complex terrorist groups penetrated U.S. intelligence and defenses. Second, he said, that there were some segments within the U.S. government who orchestrated the attack to reverse the declining American economy and its grips on the Middle East. The majority of the American people, he said, as well as other nations and politicians, agree with this view. And then thirdly, after the Americans stood up and walked out without listening to the third theory, that the attack was the work of a terrorist group, but that the American government supported and took advantage of the situation. Richard Gage, who is with the Architectural Engineers 9/11 Truth Movement, he will be up in a moment to react to this story. Really strange story out at the UN. Drug maker Abbott Laboratories said it's recalling millions of containers of its best-selling Similac infant formula that may be contaminated with insect parts. Yuck. The voluntary action affects up to 5 million Similac brand powder formulas sold in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Guam, and some Caribbean countries. The company said the products may contain a small beetle or larva, which could cause stomach ache and digestion problems. The recall does not affect any liquid formulas or other Abbott brand products. Food safety expert Jeff Nelkin on with us now. Man, Jeff, these recalls seem like we're doing one every night now.
Good evening. Yeah, I guess it's becoming a very popular, more popular than we really should have.
How difficult is it to keep rodents and insect parts out of the processed food system?
Well, generally speaking, if you have a good pest control program, you know, you should be able to, you know, be on top of it and not have any additional insects or pest-related issues. But, you know, it's something you constantly fight. But that's where quality assurance and that's where checking, you know, what's going on should catch these things and, you know, really be preventing them before they happen.
Well, you know, it's an incredible story again, Jeff, here where safety doesn't seem to come first, does it?
Well, hopefully for, you know, for Abbott, you know, that's what they're saying. It does come first, but I'm just concerned about, you know, how they even tackle this by saying the possibility might be that it might cause gastrointestinal discomfort and refusal to eat, you know, for these newborn babies. So it's kind of upsetting that, you know, that's the kind of response that they would publicly, you know, admit to.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Jeff. Jeff's website, foodsafetycoach.com. A fifth child has died in Peru in an outbreak of rabies spread by vampire bats. The death in the northern Amazon region brings the total number of people killed in the outbreak to 20 now. A local health official said 3,500 people had been bitten by the blood-sucking bats. Eddie Fisher, whose huge fame as a pop singer was overshadowed by scandals ending his marriages to Debbie Reynolds to marry Elizabeth Taylor, has died. He was 82 years old. He died in Los Angeles from complications from hip surgery. Facebook was inaccessible to many users Thursday afternoon, with people getting error messages and as DNS failure pages when they tried to visit the website. Facebook, which has 500 million users worldwide, said it's experiencing some site issues, which is causing Facebook to be slow or unavailable for some users. Security expert Kevin Mitnick with us. Kevin, how could this happen? I mean, you would think that a company as big as Facebook now could avoid these problems.
Yeah, you think, but obviously they have something wrong with operations. And it's not only Facebook. Well, maybe this Facebook outage, maybe it's like a kind of a promotion for the new Mark Zuckerberg movie coming out. But no, that's, you know, obviously that's not the case. But Chase, my bank, was out for 3 days. I couldn't even log online and pay any bills because they had a database outage And then coincidentally, I guess Facebook goes down for a few days as well.
Now, in Chase's case, it wasn't the bank, it was their online site, right, that went down?
Right, yeah, their online site. So they had some Oracle database issue, and people that pay bills online were pretty much down for three entire days, and that's pretty substantial for a major bank like Chase.
Absolutely. Somebody playing around with the system, Kevin?
I don't think so. If there was some hacking or security issues going on, they're pretty mum on the subject. But it sounds like it was truly a database issue with Chase. But Facebook, who knows? You know, there's DNS issues. Again, if there's a security issue, they're probably going to be quiet, but it's probably some sort of operational issue.
And what happened a couple days ago at Twitter? Some kind of mischievous hack spread through Twitter?
Yeah, I don't recall the exact title. I don't know if it was a cross-site scripting vulnerability or no, it was a mouse-over vulnerability that was released and kind of made the rounds over on the press and over Twitter. I haven't actually seen the mouse-over vulnerability, but I just heard about it.
All right, Greg. Thanks, Kevin. Always a pleasure. Kevin Mitnick, security.com. Kevin is one of a kind. He went to jail years ago for being a hacker. And now he's a security consultant to corporations worldwide. Who better knows than someone like Kevin? The average monthly wireless bill is now $78 compared to $69 a few years ago, according to J.D. Power and Associates, which also found that Apple's iPhone continues to rank highest in customer satisfaction among manufacturers of smartphones. They say one of the reasons for the monthly increases, people are using web browsing, a lot of emails on their phones, and a lot of text messaging as well. This year's home sales are shaping up to be as dismal as last year, despite cheap home prices and mortgage rates that have fallen to the lowest levels in decades. Sales of previously occupied homes rose last month, but not enough to keep this summer from being the slowest for home sales in more than a decade. They say the year is not expected to finish much better. A 49-year-old Jackson, Michigan man has been arrested following a fight with the pet parrot he carried on his backpack. Police say 911 calls started coming in around 9:30 p.m. with witnesses reporting that a man was violently shaking the bird. Officers who responded to the call said the bird's feathers were scattered everywhere and that the bird was limping. However, police said the bird did bite the man several times on the hands, drawing blood. I would, too, if they were shaking me. The man told police that he'd been trying to train the bird, and when it didn't listen, he shook it. The man is being held in jail, pending charges, the bird given to an animal rescue unit. Up next, Richard Gage with us reacting to the story of Ahmadinejad, the Iranian president, and what he said at the UN today. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. This segment, we're going to chat with Richard Gage, the founding member of the AE11 Truth Organization, a group of architectural engineers. He's been practicing architecture for 20 years. He has worked on most types of building construction, including numerous fireproofed steel-framed buildings. Richard worked on the design development for a very large mixed-use urban project using about 1,200 tons of steel framing. He's been on the program many times. Here he is, Richard Gage on Coast to Coast. Richard, how are you?
Doing great, George. How are you doing?
Good. Today? I'm doing fine. I wanted to get your take on Ahmadinejad. I think he did one thing wrong in this is, you know, he continues to spout his anti-Semitic venom, but which I think takes away from the real issue of what really happened. I mean, we all know the 9/11 Commission, most of the members said afterwards, you know, this commission didn't do a thorough job into this investigation, but he came up with three possibilities. And of course, you and your architects, professional people, have been looking at this for years now. You believe there's a bigger story here as well. What's your reaction to today's situation and the walkout by the American delegation?
Well, there's the problem is that there's a lot of truth in what this Middle Eastern dictator is saying. We don't want to hear it from him, and we shouldn't. We should be hearing it from 1,300 architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth who are demanding a new investigation. The American people are waking up to the reality slowly, but it's happening. We have gained a significant ground. We had a major press conference on September 9th in Washington, D.C. We passed out DVDs and our 9/11 investigator mm-hmm. newsletter to every member of Congress. We met with 12 of them like we did last year, and they're getting it. Everybody gets it who's willing to. And what we're talking about, of course, is the destruction, the controlled demolition of all three World Trade Center high-rises on 9/11. So let's not hear this from Ahmadinejad. Let's go to the scientific forensic evidence that shows that Building 7, for instance, this third skyscraper, to collapse straight down symmetrically into its own footprint and almost at free fall acceleration in the exact manner of a classic controlled demolition. Let's look at the DVD and say, is that destruction by fire, or is that a destruction with placed explosive charges? And everybody, every architect, engineer, and everybody else can see clearly that, in fact, it is. And yet we're told that it was dropped by, it was collapsed by fire. Now, that can't happen because you have to remove all 24 core columns within a tenth of a second of each other to pull a building
down. What if, Richard, let me be the devil's advocate here for a moment. What if the terrorists, and then we'll go through these three scenarios that Ahmadinejad pointed out, and you're right, he doesn't have the credibility. And that's why when he spouts this, nobody's going to listen to him. If architects say it, then people wake up and say, my gosh, what are they talking about here? Maybe we should look at it. But be that as it may, is it possible that those buildings were brought down in a controlled demolition fashion, but terrorists, true terrorists, the ones we've been talking about for so many years, they may have been the ones to have manipulated and set those devices in those buildings?
Well, that's a worthy question. And of course, a real investigation would tell us who brought those buildings down with explosive demolition. The question you raise can be answered also by asking ourselves, did 19 fundamentalist hijackers, for instance, or terrorists working with them, have access to the three of the most highly secure buildings outside the Pentagon? Probably not. Did they have access to the nanothermite explosive materials, energetic composite materials that can be engineered to be explosive? These are found in all the World Trade Center dust samples by this international team of scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen, Jeff Farrar in Utah, and Stephen Jones, a physicist. This team found nanothermitic composite materials. These chips that they found in the dust have components that are 1,000 times smaller than the human hair. These are made only in the most sophisticated, advanced defense contracting laboratories. You know, they're not made in a cave in Afghanistan. Very, very advanced material. And we only had access to this material, we only known about it since a few years before 9/11, as Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore documented this material. So this is very, very hard evidence of explosive demolition, but also in all that World Trade Center dust, which, by the way, was composed of 30% of concrete, which was powdered,
right,
pulverized to a fine powder. But also in that dust, USGS, U.S. Geological Survey, and environmental firms doing their toxicological studies on this dust find billions of previously molten iron spheres. They're in the spherical shape because molten iron, when it's atomized, it pulls itself into liquid molten iron, pulls itself into droplets. That's what happens when you spray water out of a bottle, for instance. Those are all spheres. They cool and they fall with all of the dust. Well, where did they come from? The fact that they're molten iron indicates that they sustain temperatures well over 2,800 degrees. But those fires and that jet fuel is only half that temperature, 1,500 degrees. So we've got to look at reality when we look at this evidence. And by the way, this particular evidence was completely ejected from the report by NIST when they took over from FEMA.
Will we ever get to the bottom of all of this, Richard, in your opinion?
You bet, because the American people are waking up to the reality. They're saying, I can't reconcile all of this evidence that the Architects, Engineers for 9/11 Truth and others around the country are bringing out. We're speaking, and we've spoken now in 40 cities in America and 17 countries around the world, the groups of 200 to 700. And our website is very, very busy, ae911truth.org. And people can see this evidence on the website and in the DVD, and they're writing their congressmen, they're writing their senators, they're writing the media, and they're going to force the media to deal with this issue.
What was it first when this happened, Richard, that got you to say, I need to check into this? There's something a little bigger than we're being told.
Well, these buildings, the Twin Towers, for instance, were destroyed in just 10 seconds. 10 to 15, depending on how you measure it. This is almost free-fall acceleration. The top portion of the North Tower it disintegrates above the point of jet plane impacts. It's gone in 4 seconds, and there's nothing left to destroy the building underneath it. It's just tearing itself apart, and it's doing that at two-thirds of free-fall acceleration, as measured by the physicists. So we that can't happen against 80,000 tons of structural steel designed to resist any collapse of that building for the life of that building. It just can't happen. Those columns had to have been explosively removed, and that's what we see in the videos, upward, outward arching streamers, lateral ejection of individual structural components at 70 miles an hour, instant acceleration out of the side of the Twin Towers, landing up to 600 feet away. Explosive ejections of building materials 20, 40, 60 stories in these massive plumes below this zone of destruction. And no floors are found at the bottom of either of these twin towers. They're not found in the photos or the videos. We would expect a stack of floors in a gravitational collapse, about maybe 50 of them or 100 of them. There's 100 floors, 110 floors in these buildings. We don't find any of them. They've all been pulverized and blown outside the footprint of these buildings. And when we show this to architects and engineers, they're aghast. They drop their jaws and they sign our petition. And that's why we have so many demanding a new investigation.
If you were part of this U.S. delegation at the U.N. today and you heard Ahmadinejad, would you have gotten up and walked out with the rest of the group?
Well, that's a tough question, isn't it?
They all are.
Yeah. I don't want to hear a Middle Eastern dictator say anything bad about my country. I'm a patriot. I'm a Reagan Republican. But when we're not getting the truth told by our government, maybe this is what we get. We get a massive applause to a third-rate dictator from the Middle Eastern country, Iran, having to tell the truth. We have to hear it from him. At least we're hearing it, for God's sake. That's the important thing. Americans deserve to hear it. They deserve to be angry about it. Maybe it will prompt them to find out the facts.
Well, he mentioned three scenarios. One of them is right. I don't know which one, but he did mention three. Very quickly, Richard, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being probably the one you would believe, just tell me what you think of the quick three before, while we still have this minute left. The first statement he said was, a powerful, complex terrorist group penetrated U.S. intelligence and defenses. They brought the building down. Scale of 1 to 10, how accurate do you think that one could be?
Well, I'm guessing that a powerful terrorist group could not have penetrated our CIA, FBI, defense intelligence.
So you'd give that a low number.
But someone in those agencies is probably responsible. I mean, it has to be some sort of an inside operation.
Well, that leads us into his second scenario, which he says segments within U.S. government either orchestrated the attack to reverse the declining American economy and its grips on the Middle East. And then his third theory was that it was a work of a terrorist group, but the American government supported and took advantage of the situation. So I assume you believe it's one of those two.
Well, it has to be. It just by implication, we're looking at the most advanced, sophisticated nanothermitic composite materials, these pyrotechnics or explosives cannot have come from a cave in Afghanistan. This is extremely sophisticated.
Well, I've looked at the work of your organization, Richard, for years, and you do, as architectural engineers, remarkable work. It's scary because you have great ideas about what could have happened on that very horrible day, September 11, 2001. I hope we get to the truth one day, whatever it is and wherever it takes us. Up next, Brian Johnson joins us, the first of our paranormal investigators on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, tonight we're going to begin our very special reports, paranormal investigators, and our first investigator is Brian Johnson. Had his first paranormal experience at Gettysburg in 1995 while on a family trip, and then he joined Peace of Mind Paranormal Society, called POMPS, in 2008 as an investigator. POMPS is primarily involved with investigating paranormal events that deal with children, and they have also designed a new line of IR illuminators. We'll talk about that, too. Here's Brian Johnson on Coast to Coast. Brian, this is fascinating, dealing with children and IR illuminators. What are these illuminators?
It is a we more or less have built the better mouse trap out there. Paranormal investigators have used the same equipment for years. And the three of us, Don Wagner, Brent Chutchek, and myself, we sat down and said, you know, what can we do that will help paranormal investigators everywhere? And so we designed, we broke down the basic IR illuminators that have already been out there on the market for years. And we broke it down to its simplest form. You know, we designed a, we used a 30-degree bulb, but we used the bulb in a specific way where we spaced them far enough apart mm-hmm. that we get the full potential out of the 30-degree bulb, where most IRs, they only use, you know, four or five in a cluster, and they're only getting about a 45-degree angle, where we're getting a full 30-degree, and it has shown so much further. Where a regular illuminator might only get 20 feet, we're getting over 100 feet out of our illuminators.
Was this trial and error? Did you have to experiment a lot before you got it down to the perfect way you liked?
Very little trial and error, thank God. we didn't have as much as we thought we would have, but we did a lot of research before we started the build. And that it really paid off for us.
And then you got involved in child hauntings. How'd you hone in on that?
We had our the first little girl haunting that we had. We were investigating a place called 13 Bends. It's right outside of Pittsburgh. And we were doing an EVP session, and it was a child who had been abducted, sexually assaulted, and murdered in the spot. And the EVP that came through said, "Don't hurt me." And that really affected all of us severely.
Sure.
And it really started to make us think, what do all these other, you know, TV shows, other paranormal groups out there basically all do the same thing? They're all saying, okay, we'll go into a place. Yes, you have a haunting, or yes, there is a child here that is haunting this place. Okay, we'll see you later. What about the children? Nobody has been helping them, whether it's a child being haunted or it's a child spirit. That, you know, our theory is that depending on the age of the child, they really don't know what death is. They weren't really told what it is. A lot of them don't know what to do. So when we go and investigate, we do our research, we find out as much as we possibly can about the haunting that is involved. And we talk to it like a regular child. I'm a parent of five kids.
Good for
you. Our other investigator, our founder, Don Wagner, he's a parent of four children.
When do you two have time to investigate?
Well, we have very understanding families, thank God. We devote a lot of time to this. And when we do our investigations, we talk to these child spirits like they're our own children. And we've gotten some unbelievable reaction out of this. And, you know, we just tell them, look, you don't have to be here. You can cross over. You have people waiting for you, you know, to go. You don't have to be here no longer. Now, whether or not, you know, they cross over, we don't know. You know, there's no proof that anybody can say, yes, they crossed over. yes, the child crossed over, but we hope it went on to a better place, wherever that place may be.
Absolutely. Now, in your career of investigating child cases, is there one that stands out for you?
We had a case at a private residence, and it was a child. The family who was living there said they had seen it many, many times, didn't know what to do. They were very panicky, very scared. And this was one of our very first child hauntings that we really went after specifically for children. And we were up in the master bedroom of this house, and we had four digital voice recorders all sitting on a bed all at the same time. And our leader, Don, he said, well, I'm going to go sit over here when we do our EVP session. Well, then we heard this noise, and it was very faint, so we rolled back our digital voice recorder, and it said, when Don said, I'm going to go over here to do our EVP session, the voice that came over said, be sure to look at me.
Wow.
And it was a voice of a little girl. And so, you know, again, that it really touched home to all of us, because the voice, it sounded so young.
Well, there's something about the eerie sound of a child, Brian, to me, that is very haunting. I don't know
Absolutely.
Why, but, you know, they seem simple. It's kind of sad.
Mm-hmm.
But it freaks me out when I hear these EVP sounds of a child, or even those stories. And I don't know why. Why is it?
Well, they are so innocent. And a lot of these are such tragic events that have, you know, brought this child to this point. And it's exactly what they are. You know, they're not, we hate to refer these to these children as ghosts or spirits or apparitions, whatever you want to call them. They are real people. You know, they need to move on. They need to know exactly what has happened. What our thoughts are, your own child gets hurt, what would you do?
Oh, I'd never be the same, Brian. Either would you.
No. So we have some, parents who call us, and it's been years, but they still feel that, their child is still there with them.
Does it comfort a parent when they deal with you, if they feel as if the child has finally moved on?
Well, they feel that it's finally at peace, that it's, the parents' biggest fear is that their child is hurting. You know, and that's, again, that's every parent's fear.
Yeah.
They don't want their
Nobody
child to be hurt
that.
Or hurting all the time. And when, a parent has a child, unfortunately, dies way too young, that's the first thing the parents are thinking. And if they can feel it in their house, you know, they call us and they say, please, please, please. And they're usually, it's such a hard time for them. And it really, really drives it home for us that we know we're doing the right thing by doing this.
How many cases a year do you folks look at, Pumps?
We do anywhere from 20 to 30 cases a year. That's, all over the country. We go anywhere we possibly can. We get calls from all over the country that are referred to us or call us directly or contact us through our website. And that's not even counting all the other charity work that we do. We'll team up with other groups. So we are constantly working. And again, thank God we have very understanding wives.
Absolutely. Stay with us, Brian. We're going to come back in just a moment, and we're going to take phone calls with you for your remaining moment here with us. All the websites of the paranormal investigators that we're going to be talking to tonight, along with you, are up on the coasttocoastam.com website right now with special links to their very special website. So go ahead and take a look at some of the things that they do. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your phone calls with paranormal investigator Brian Johnson, who's with the Peace of Mind Paranormal Society. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Brian, tell us about the IR Illuminators again. Take us through how it would work on a investigation.
Definitely you have to have a video camera that has some sort of night shot already built in. That is an absolute must, because otherwise they won't work. But a regular IR illuminator, whether, you know, if you're in a large room, you're still only going to get about 20 feet, even out of the you know, the leading brand that's out there, where our illuminators, we're getting well over 100 feet out of them. And it makes the picture on the video come through so clear that it you would swear sometimes that all the lights are on in the place. Our videos are so bright. We actually, when we're examining the video, we actually have to dull it down a little because it's too bright sometimes, depending on the size.
So you're happy with what you've got?
Oh, absolutely. We've gotten it's been about maybe about 2 to 3 months now where we have been really pushing those, and we have gotten so many backers from other paranormal groups and some very well-known paranormal investigators that are on TV now. Chris Dedman from the Travel Channel, Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence, CC the Huntress, Dave Jones from Para X Radio, Keith and Sandra Johnson, they've all backed us. They all use our equipment. It is also being tested on some current paranormal shows that are on TV right now. It's
Beautiful.
Being tested by them. So we are extremely happy. We've had nothing but good luck with these.
Well, let's go to the calls. Jason is in Kannapolis, North Carolina. Hey, Jason, go ahead.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi, Jason.
I actually have a question. I'd like to know whether it was demonic or if it was a ghost being or whatnot. I actually can remember before I was 2 years old, whether you believe it or not. And
I believe that because, Jason, I remember an event when I was 18 months old, documented, and the date was documented. So
okay,
so
wonderful.
Two's fine, yeah.
That, I was in my crib, and we moved into my house when I was 2 years old. And we moved from a trailer park into the house, and from the age of 2 to 6 years old, I would see my parents' bedroom would be at the end of the hall to the left, and my sister's bedroom would be all the way straight across from the room of my parents. And my room, which was intended to be my room, was before you ever got to, was at the start of when you started to walk down the hall. I slept with my parents until I was 10 years old before I moved into the bed with my sister to try. They were trying to wean me out of their bed. On a weekly basis, I kid you not, 2 to 3 times a week, something would come down the hall and enter into whichever room that I was in. If it was my mother's room, my father's room, it would come into the room. And it would be a black figurine, blacker than the night. Like it would be darker than dark, and I could see it. Or it would be like a black and white negative. And it would come into the room, and I would scream. And that's the only way it would go away. And my parents would wake up, and my mom said, you were just having a nightmare. You were just having a nightmare. I told her what I seen. They didn't believe me. And this kept on happening over and over again, and they moved me into the middle of them, to sleep into the middle of them, because I felt safer.
Sure.
And I kid you not, it would come to the foot of the bed and stare at me and look directly at me because it like knew that I was in the middle. And I would try to scream. Sometimes I couldn't. Sometimes I was paralyzed from head to toe, and I couldn't even breathe. And right before I felt like I was fixing to pass out, that's when I would be able to scream. And it would go away. My mother would get up and do the same thing again. And this happened year after year after year. And today, I'm 27 years old, and I suffer from panic attacks, anxiety attacks.
All because of this?
All because of this. And it to my knowledge, all because of this. I would ask my friends if they had any of these experiences as a child. And my mom actually asked my father if I should see a psychiatrist. But we grew up in a very conservative Baptist home, and he just kind of gave her the look of, no, you know, that's kind of like, not, no, let's not go there. But the thing is maybe I should have seen a psychiatrist or something.
Well,
I
mean, let's get Brian's take on this, Jason. What do you think? Should
Jason,
he have seen?
Did you ever do any type of research on the property of your parents' house, the history behind it?
No, I never have, but I've always wondered. I mean, it's in a local suburbia neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
With other houses around there, and no one has ever, you know, said anything like it's never been brought up around the neighborhood
okay.
of the development, like anything has happened. It was kind of like it was directed to me. Even if I went to my sister's bedroom and tried to sleep, the figures would still come into my sister's room. Now, I was not imagining this. I was wide awake with my eyes wide open. I wasn't dreaming.
Very often, even if the house, you know, let's say when your parents bought it, it was only a few years old, maybe they were the second owners or whatever, that something very well could have been attached to the land and then attached itself to you.
Do you think he should have undergone some psychiatric help and examination?
Well, you know, that is really it's a matter of opinion on what you believe. It couldn't hurt, especially if you're having problems sleeping now. A lot of times, you know, when kids see those kind of things, they won't go to their parents because parents won't believe them.
No.
And we have run into that so many times until our group actually shows them proof. All right, here's some EVPs or here.
Yeah, you know, your kid's not nuts. Yeah.
Right. So especially you said you were raised in a very conservative house.
That's right.
That is a very tough call. You have some very tough parents there to try and convince.
Let's go to Doolittle, Missouri, first-time caller. Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Okay, Jeff.
How you doing? Anyway, my theory was during your EVP recordings and all that, have you ever tried any spiritual readings, or, you know, from the Bible and stuff like that to get the children's souls, you know, the look, search for the light?
Well, we do have, depending on the severeness of the situation, the severity, we do bring in specialists. We have a medium who works with us. We also have demonologists who work with us. And we try to, and again, it depends on the house, because the when we do an investigation, especially when it involves a child, the people who call us are there with us when we do the investigation. So we always try and consider their feelings, you know, depending on what kind of religion that they were raised on.
No, that's important, Brian.
Yes, absolutely, because we want them to feel comfortable with us coming into their home.
Give out your website, would you, Brian?
It is www.palms.org.
All right, very good. And do you continue to do investigations on a regular basis?
We do at least one every 2 weeks. We are so booked between our investigations, and we do a lot of lecturing at local libraries and a lot of charity events we go to. We still do it all the time, even though we're trying to build up our business when we're selling the illuminators. We can't forget about the children.
All right, very good. Thank you, Brian. Brian Johnson, the first of our paranormal investigators tonight on our series of special reports. Up next, we'll have Eric Haney. His group is Monroe Falls Paranormal Society. Let's find out what he has to say, and then later on in the half hour, we'll take your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM.